Good evening, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. First, I'd like to introduce Mr. Ben Schroeder, who is a sophomore at Concordia Lutheran High School and an Eagle Scout with Troop 113 here in Tomball. And he's just going to do the invocation and the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And please join me in the Texas flag.
Honor of the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state, under God, one indivisible.
If you'll please join me in prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for this great day. Thank you for blessing us with these two candidates and thank you for blessing us with the state of Tomball. Please be with them on their campaign trail and please put all the words in their mouth they need to say. In your name we pray. Amen.
The goals for tonight's forum are information for the district's voters. Also, it should be mentioned that the Greater Tomball Chamber of Commerce is a 501(c)(6) nonprofit organization and does not support any or endorse any political candidate. We want this to be a fair and impartial medium. And it is a forum, not a debate. And additionally, in the guidelines that were given out to the candidates, there was mention of the campaign literature on college campus, and that is prohibited. So if you have those things, please do not sign as they happen. Please don't put those things out. I'd like to thank everybody for being here. We appreciate your time. We know it's important. I'd like to thank the candidates for being here, Ellen and Gordon. We appreciate that very much. I'd like to recognize some city and state and federal officials that may be here and or their representatives. By the way, when I call out your name, Ms. Gretchen Faggett, mayor of the city of Tomball, there she is. Who else we got here? Mary Harvey, city council member, Trevini, and Sarah Puckett with the Opry newspaper. And I almost forgot Debbie Riddle, who just walked in, who is a representative of District 150, where are you, Debbie? Oh, you're okay. Dale, I'm sorry. The question screeners for tonight are Mr. Mike Steele and Mr. Dan Sundquist. They are not residents of District 130, nor did they have any business relationship with the candidates that would be affected by the outcome of this forum. The timekeeper is Ms. Diana McCoy, sitting down here in the front. She is president of Texas Community Bank. And I would like to introduce Mr. Steve Lesterjet, who will be our moderator this evening. He's an associate vice chancellor of public affairs for the Lone Star College System, and he is also not a resident of District 130, nor does he have any business relationship with either candidate that would be affected by the outcome of this election. And if Mr. Lesterjet would come up, he can go over the procedures and guidelines for tonight's forum.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Bruce, for this invitation. I'm here because I believe in democracy and I love it at this level, and so I'm privileged to be a part of it. Before we begin, let me review the guidelines that we have set for this evening. I want you to know that the candidates have drawn for their seating positions. During the question and answer portion of the program, each will rotate the order in which the questions are answered. Each candidate will have up to 3 minutes of introductory and closing remarks. Each will have up to 2 minutes to respond to the question asked of them. Candidates, if a question is asked of one of you, the other will have an opportunity to respond. I ask that you do your best to keep your questions to the limited time allotment and take the pressure off your friendly moderator. Any resident of District 130 in attendance may pose a question in writing on the index card we provided by handing it to an attendant, and we encourage you to do so. As we progress, additional questions or follow-up questions may be submitted in the very same way. Audience, if you would like to ask a follow-up question, please write on the index card we provide and raise your hand. An attendant will pick up your question and hand it to our question screeners. We will ask questions as long as they are provided from the audience. Having said that, let me introduce you to our candidates. They will sit in the audience, and gentlemen, if you will join me. Corbin Van Arsdale is a fifth-generation Texan. He was elected to the Texas House of Representatives in 2002, 2004, and 2006 to serve the people of Tri-Fair, Spring, Klein, Tomball, and Waller. Corbin attended public schools in Texas, California, Louisiana, and South Carolina, as well as a private school in France. Corbin graduated with finance and law degrees from the University of Texas at Austin, where he lettered in baseball as a manager. After law school, Corbin worked for 7 years practicing admiralty law and challenging the issues of racial quotas by government. He now serves as general counsel for Boyer Incorporated, a family-owned civil construction firm in Houston. Corbin is involved in a number of local civic organizations. He likes to read about history, politics, our nation's founders and policy, play guitars, surf, and work on Africa issues. He is married and has 2 daughters and a son who attend Tomball schools. Alan Fletcher is a Tomball businessman, community activist, Christian, devoted husband, and loving father. He has dedicated his career to serving and protecting the public. After a 21-year career as a Houston police officer, Alan is now a president and CEO of Resource Protection Management. He established RPM to offer asset protection to corporations. As a result of his leadership, RPM now provides a full spectrum of security solutions for commercial, education, and state bar of Texas Review Committee. In addition, he is a member of the Sam Houston State University Alumni Association Board of Directors and the President's Circle. He also sponsors a scholarship for criminal justice at Sam Houston State. Alan and his wife, Penny, are active members of the Spring Creek Church of Christ. The Fletchers have 2 daughters and a son. We are now ready for opening statements. Corbin, you have drawn the first position. Let me just say that the gentleman before they took the podium drew for positions or seating positions, and Corbin has won the honor of our first opening statement. Sir?
Do we stay right here at our desk? I don't know if is that an honor to be first? I don't know. My name is Corbin Van Arsdale, and I'm a fifth generation Texan, and I became a believer at the age of 7, and I was called to public service at the age of 8, which is pretty young. When I grew up, I moved around a lot growing up, even though my family, my grandparents, my great grandparents are all from Texas. I moved around a lot with my parents. I moved around, I got to see a lot of places in the really accomplished several things that had been sort of stacked up for years by the Democrats. And then ever since that time, there's been a drift in leadership, I guess is how I would best describe it. We've been trying to push conservative issues, but we've had the guys at the top have been fighting amongst themselves and just not really, leading on conservative issues. But I can tell you that in my 3 terms and my 11 sessions that we've had, that we were supposed to have 3 sessions, but we've had 11. I've accumulated one of the 20 most conservative voting records in the entire state of Texas. And, there's been a lot of things said about, on the radio they used to call me, talked about how conservative the legislator was, how great the legislator was. And then right about the time of February 2006, also the radio started talking about how liberal and lazy the legislator I was. And there's a reason for the timing of that. It's 1 month before the 2006 primary. But the main issues I want us to work on, the legislation has failed on thus far, are the various issues dealing with illegal immigration, are the various issues dealing with appraisal reform, and also state spending. I passed a bill to put a lot of all the state spending online. It just happened in October. The comptroller started to put all the spending, agency spending online, so you can go online and search the database and find out where the expenditures are going. We also need to stop the Trans-Texas Corridor. There's been a lot of talk about the Trans-Texas Corridor. Every member of the House voted for the transportation bill that included that. Since 2004, I, Cole Corson, and Hager have been fighting that tooth and nail along with Representative Riddle. Now, I'm getting back to the red card, so I'm done.
here in the back, and my daughter. Thank y'all for being here tonight. I also want to thank the Greater Tomball Area Chamber of Commerce for giving us this forum. I think all of you know that based on my past 9 years involvement in the Tomball Chamber of Commerce, that I really believe, and last year as the chairman of the board, I talked to everyone about the fact that I thought the secret for us to be successful as a chamber was for us to network and do business together. And I think we had success in that this last year. And I just want to say that my decision at this stage of my life, I'm 52 years old, I've retired from the Houston Police Department, I've been very blessed, successful with RPM. I thought this business thing was going to be easy when I first started. I got a contract with Enron. I had 380 employees on a Friday afternoon. Monday morning, I had 30. But I will say this to the Lord, who's trying to voice, who takes care of me. Because that 30 was the reason why a judge in New York City in bankruptcy court decided that I was a necessary vendor and I got paid. And that's why I sold the business. Over the last 9 years, the 400-odd families that I've fed and the 50 that I'm feeding now by what we're all about and why we're supposed to be in Austin. And I want to have a chance, as your state rep, to go to Austin and vote the district. To vote for what is important to people. Ladies and gentlemen, I have no agenda about going to Austin. I'm not going to be wrapped up in what kind of committees I can get appointed to and what kind of, you know, endorsements that I'm going to get. Basically, I'm honored to say that a large majority, I think 25 as of today, 31 precinct chairs of District 130 endorsed it. I have a phenomenal amount of support here in this community, the past mayor, the current mayor, the superintendent of schools, the police chief, the fire chief, numerous folks throughout this community that are important in the day-to-day lives of all of our businesses and endorsing. And they think that we need someone to go to Austin and represent Tomball, Cyfair, Klein, Waller, District 130. And I'd like to ask you for your vote. Early voting starts February 19th and the primary is March 4th. Thank you.
Thank you, Candace. First question is addressed to both of you. Corbin, because you're due to one, you go first on this question, but Alan, you will respond. Are there any statements in your literature that might not be valid? Any statements in your literature that might not be valid?
About my own literature? That's a good question. Not that I'm aware of. No. Not that I'm aware of.
I like the way you keep that. Do you vote in all elections?
Law and the Republican Party and try to vote conservative issues and values. And I'll say this. You know, Christian first, conservative second, Republican third, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a lot of Republicans that, you know, have lost the sight of what our conservative party's about. I know you hear it every day on the radio, and you know, see it on our TV. I think we've got a problem in this country right now. We've got a situation where we may not have a conservative to vote for in this presidential election. And I'm not happy about that, but I can tell you that I'm satisfied with my voting record. When it comes to voting in the elections, the general elections, I'm just not satisfied with my opponent's voting record in the state house.
I voted every election that comes up. I think my voting records are public record. You can go find out who votes in what elections, and you can find out voter registration dates. If you check it out, you know, last year we had two statewide elections. One of them was, you may recall, in May, we had a statewide election to cut senior citizens' property taxes. My opponent did not vote in that election. You may also recall we had a statewide election in November. Now, the last time we were in this room, he told.
Question three is for
Can I respond?
Let me just say that, you know, my opponent wants to talk about one particular election that I may have missed after 52 years. You know, I know that that's not much. I know everybody in this room, and some of you may have missed the vote sometime. He's talking about one. Earlier today, in the forum, he was convinced that I had voted the last two. And now tonight he's talking about one. Now let me just say that in the House this last time, he missed 144 votes. That's more than one a day.
You've got the last word.
My attendance record on the House floor is 99% a day on the House floor. This past session, I made 93% of my floor votes. You guys got something in the mail, which today I found out when I showed it to him. He'd never seen the mail piece. My opponent said he'd never seen it. Full of votes that are incorrect on that mail piece.
That's actually a misrepresentation as well. I actually helped develop that mail piece. I made the comment to him that that I had never seen, listen, ladies and gentlemen, I had never seen that formal document because I had not received it in the mail as of yet. But that particular information in that mail piece, I helped put together.
Those gas by people who were here that debate today, who heard it say.
Explanation for what was said.
Let's move to a question three. We've got plenty of questions to get to from the floor. This is also addressed for both of you, and calling you to the gentleman first. Please state your position on the anchor baby issue. What would you do to clarify this issue? And please explain how
I was in that spot, and they did so through judicial activism. I will tell you that how long I lived in District 130 since September 1995 is when we bought our home in Cypress. It was in District 130. And we moved to Tomball in July of 2003, so I guess that's about 12 and a half years.
With reference to the antiquated situation, I agree. I obviously think that was designed for something after the Civil War. That was for our, when we had slaves in this country, it was designed to give their children citizenship. And what's turned into this day and time where they come over to our country just to get our benefits and have a child and then try to stay here and use that as the anchor that keeps them here. So I totally disagree with that, and I think that we should be able to do something about that. When we talk about how long I've lived in the district, I've lived in the district since October 1st of 2007, and I lived 5,100 feet from the home that I live in now in the district for 18 years. All three of my children are Tomball Cougars. I've been a member of the Rotary my opponent voted to bust the cap this time, and I would have done that. I think that a $164 billion budget is obscene. I think that it was $99 billion in 1999, and this past year, with it being $164 billion, I think we've got to the point now where all we're doing is, you know, taxing the people. This business margins tax was about that. It was addressing the shortage we have in our property tax, school tax. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that we're spending, you know, people's money. We've got to quit taxing. I'm not going to go up there and vote for a tax every time something comes up.
Well, first of all, there's an ongoing lawsuit filed by a local cloud organization, like Alabama Cloud, that could easily affect the way they can, LBB calculates the spending caps. And I think it's a good thing. I also think I was actually named to chair a subcommittee 2 weeks ago. I mean, 2 months ago, in appropriations, I'm chairing the subcommittee on doing the constitutional redirecting how the spending caps are configured, because it's not, the current formulas don't work. Now, when it comes to the spending cap you're hearing about, the reason that most of the Republicans voted to send the $14 billion back is because anytime you make an appropriation out of the Treasury, it's considered spending, regardless of what it's for. In other words, if the state were to just write checks for $14 billion and send them straight back to, remember when Bush did that a few years ago, he wrote everybody a check, it showed up in your mailbox. If the state, that spending cap measure, and the reason they voted against it is they knew if it failed, we would not get $14 billion, we would get a lot less than that. It would be spent on government programs or something instead of going back to the taxpayer to the school districts. So that's the reason that vote. You're never gonna hear that side of the story about how that worked out. You're not gonna hear it on the radio, you're not gonna hear it in your mail, but that is exactly what happened.
Question five, gentlemen, this is for Corbin to speak first. You say you are on four committees, appropriations, calendars, state affairs. What is committee number four?
Joint Select Committee for the Reform of the Texas Youth Commission. And that was a committee that was formed by the Lieutenant Governor and the Speaker on an emergency basis right in the middle of the session, because y'all may remember that a big scandal exploded during the session when all these kids were getting abused by these prison guards. So they formed a special committee that had to meet, investigate the situation, come up with recommendations, file bills, and pass the bills within 3 months. And that was the fourth committee.
I'm not on any committees, but I'm planning on being accepted. I don't think that he can represent us if he's not up there and voting for us. I don't think that being on all these committees, indicated talking about being chair of subcommittees and being made. I don't think that that's what we sent him to Austin for. I think we sent him to Austin to represent us and to be there and vote for us. And if you send me to Austin, I'll be there and I'll vote on the issues that are important to the people of District 130. I won't vote for the Texas Transportal. I won't vote to deregulate
tuition. I won't vote to bust the spending cap. Those are votes that I won't vote for. I won't vote for the trick of the card that allows illegals to get driver's license. I won't let that happen if you send me off.
Next question is for you, Alan. Alan, how do you explain conflicting information listed in your print literature and on your website?
So as I stated earlier, I'm not aware of the fact that there is conflicting information on my literature and my website. So, I mean, if you have some specific issue, I mean, I just don't know. I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
You know, yesterday in the mail, I got this mail piece from Alan. My family did. Saying that in Austin, they call me Corbin Van Absent. And I asked Alan in this debate today, you know, who in Austin calls me Corbin Van Absent? And he didn't know. He said, I don't know, because he hadn't seen the piece. That's what he said today. But I understand this evening. He's got a little different story. But, you know, 656 identifies sex offenders on the driver's license. It said it died on the floor. It didn't die on the floor. Passed out of the house. It goes on and on and on. Stuff. I'm here to tell you, it's more, today he said he hadn't seen the piece. Maybe it just means he hadn't seen this particular, I don't know what he had. I'm just telling you that what they're trying to do, what's happened here, is I'm one of the hardest working House members there is. That's why I got stuck on the three, why I got placed on the three hardest working committees in the House, Appropriations, State Affairs, and Calendars. I got stuck on those, put on those, because they know I work. You don't put lazy people on those committees. Anybody that's in the legislature knows that. What you're being told, what the people in District 1 to 30 are being told, is that I'm liberal and I'm lazy. Well, that is false, and that is deception. And you know what? I know it, my colleagues know it, God knows it, and that's all I need to know. Every school district hit the cap. And once they hit the cap, they file a lawsuit. You know, the legislature, first they tried to just cut the spending, and that didn't have enough votes. Because they knew if that failed, we would probably, there would have to be increased spending and increased taxes. See, a lot of people don't know that the business tax changes, every dollar that comes into the business tax changes has to be used to reduce the property tax dollar for dollar. See, it goes into a separate fund. It's not going to the regular appropriations bill. It goes into a separate fund and is used to buy down the school property tax. The vote we had on the floor that day was not to repeal the business tax. I'm done.
Next question.
Well,
no, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I heard him say that they had businessmen go around and, decide to make this happen. I just wondered, I'd like to know what business that was that decided to put a margin tax that taxed them on their gross and not their net that obviously damages all of our small businesses here. I wouldn't have voted for it. I think that you as small business people wouldn't have wanted to vote for it. I was told, I heard Corbin say during his campaign, and I heard him say it in settings when I was the chairman of the chamber, that they had a special session, 30 days, they were concerned that the Texas Supreme Court would hold the school. I talked to a lot of folks about the fact that their school taxes haven't gone down. I really don't think that the Texas Supreme Court is going to close our schools if we put this burden on small businesses across the state. And I really believe that, Corbin himself has said that it may be bad law. They might go back and try to revise it. I know that if I get a chance to go to Austin, I'm going to vote there. Well, I don't have an exact number on. I think Senator Patrick probably put about $20,000 into my campaign. I know that you can rest assured that the state ethics committee and the way the state handles this, that he's having to be very careful. Any of you that listen to Dan on the radio know that he's having to be very careful and fair about how he's handling the radio ads and how he's doing this. Everyone knows that they keep track of all that. And I'm totally convinced that, ladies and gentlemen, that Senator Dan Patrick, our senator, the one that represents District 130, is our voice in the Senate. I think it's important that we have a voice in the House. Senator Patrick, along with a lot of the other folks I mentioned to you all ago, truly believes that we need someone that represents the views of the people of District 130 in the Texas House. And that's why he's supporting me in this campaign. And that's why 25 of 31 precinct chairs, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't even understand the role of precinct chairs until I got involved in this. I don't know how many of you have had a chance in your life in politics to get out and really interact in the community and work. You go vote, you try to pay attention.
About the question or about the way
you have an opportunity to respond.
Well, I would love to own a radio station where I could just give my campaign funds to somebody else, make it around and give them to my private business. That's an interesting way to convert money to personal use, it sounds like. But, I think that, I'll tell you the history of this race, just since it's been brought up. The entire time I was in the legislature, up until February 2006, I was known as a conservative by the radio station. They used to have me on the show all the time, talk about how great I was and how I was fighting for the appraisal caps. And Dan used to call me all the time about my support for his bid for the Senate, and he used to have me on the air. And then I decided to support somebody else. And ever since that day, I have been trashed on the radio. I have been called liberal. I've been called lazy. Dan's been spending a lot of time trying to run somebody against me. That's fine. That's the American way. Nobody in the district would do it, so he got actually his Democrat opponent, Michael Kubosh, to move into Cypress and run as a Republican. He actually filed for this seat back in the fall, District 130 state rep. He started running. He had the same campaign manager as Alan Fletcher, the same campaign consultant as Alan Fletcher, the same campaign office as Alan Fletcher. You can go look up on the ethics commission. It's online. Then people found out.
We have plenty of questions. This is directed to both of you. Corbin, you go first. Did you do your own research, and where did you find the contingency votes
record?
The question does not say.
On the internet is where you get your committees. It's all on the internet. It's kind of confusing at times, but you go into each committee minutes and you can see, who was present at what time, what bills passed when, who voted, who didn't. I've been there for 6 years. And so we had special sessions, regular sessions. My first session, I served on two committees, both pretty light. The insurance committee was somewhat heavy, but the urban affairs was pretty light. My second session, I served on three, including calendars. So my other two met the exact same time on the exact same day, every single time. And then this last session, I just had, four committees, and they were pretty intense. But you look up the records by going through the internet and looking them up, and the House clerk can also pull up records on four buttons for you.
My research on it is that I saw the official documents, and why does the Houston Police Officers Association endorse Corbett and Homestead? Well, first of all, it's not the Houston Police Officers Association, and the Houston Police Officers Retired Officers Association endorses me. That's my peers, that's the men and women that I retired with over the years. They're part of our organization. But the Houston Police Officers Union endorses Corbin Bowersville, and the Houston Police Officers Union endorses every incumbent. Right back in the days when we were all, there's some Houston police officers in this crowd, when they were endorsing Kathy Whitmire, and she was mayor, and there wasn't a Houston police officer in the city that would vote for Kathy Whitmire. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of the different endorsements that he's throwing out, that he's talking about, it's all about the club, folks. It's all about the incumbents. It's all about sticking together. And I just want you to understand that what's important to me as the person who's trying to be your state rep is that the precinct chairs, the men and women that live in the district, that walk and knock on the doors, and you yourselves understand that I'll be an Austin representative.
I think the reason that they endorsed me is because I've been very supportive of their issues and helped them pass their bills. My first session, which was just a freshman, I was actually named Law Enforcement Legislator of the Year. I got an award for that. So when I was in urban affairs, a lot of their issues came to my committee, and I was very supportive and fought for them. And I like to think that's what they said in their statements. I have to take them at their word. That's why they're supporting me. Well, when you're in the legislature, when you're not in session, most of your time is spent actually just addressing directly people's problems that they're having with the government. Like, for example, neighborhoods have a problem with pipelines or contaminated water, so you're dealing with agencies. You're dealing with TCEQ, TxDOT, Railroad Commission, and because these are unelected, these people are unelected, they're bureaucrats. They tend to be more responsive to legislators who can do something to them. I guess it's a nice way to put it. One of the things I've enjoyed helping people out these last couple of years is the fact that I have been in places where I can leverage these guys. And so ordinarily, TxDOT, for example, is a big bully. They go around bullying people. Well, if you're on appropriations, sometimes you can leverage them, and they're a lot nicer to you and more responsive. There's people in this room who I'm seeing here who have had problems with TxDOT, and we've been able to help them with. Change designs on things, move things around, get a lot of responses. Same thing with TCEQ, same thing with Railroad Commission. Like
having loyalties to any of those special interest groups that we just mentioned, all the things going on, I'll be there for the people of District 130. And I think it's time that someone went up to Austin that didn't have an agenda about what committees they were going to be on, and what chairmanship they were going to have, and who they were going to answer to, other than the people back here in District 130.
Next question, Alan. This is directed to both of you. You're first. Why can't this election be conducted with the demeanor of factual information and no name calling?
Is factual. And my opponent's never denied the fact that he missed these votes. He's never denied the fact that he was on these committees and wasn't there 50% of the time, 42%. He's never denied that. He just tries to explain around. I'm no cop by trade, and I was an investigator, and we always dealt with the facts. And my opponent is a lawyer. And over the years, I've learned that they're real good at kind of working the case and trying to, he's trying to make a case here for the fact that he was number one in absenteeism in all elected officials in Harris County, in the House, in the Republican Party.
That's not acceptable. I want 1/3.
Austin, Corbin Van absent. My real name is Corbin Van Arsdale. That's still my family here today with the last name Van Arsdale. I don't appreciate my name being locked like that. Even my children, by the way. And what my daughter did ask me why they were doing that, and I told them she could ask you about that. Again, I will tell you that if you look at this thing, first bill on here, House Bill 13, Comprehensive Illegal Immigration Bill, died in committee, it says. That bill didn't die in committee. It passed out of the House, and I voted for it on the House floor. House Bill 2656, identify sex offenders on a driver's license, it says it died on the floor, it did die on the floor. It passed out of the House. I voted for it on the House floor. Say, I think there's a bunch of these in here like this. This is just false information. And I don't know who did it, but now there's a lot of people out there that think that's the way it happened. And that's not true. I can tell you, when you're placed on the calendars committee, okay, you take on a certain duty when you're placed on the calendars committee, and the duty that you have is you have to look at every bill that's passed out of every committee because it's law. Okay, the first part is, a lot of the biggest business people in the state of Texas, especially in the Houston region, have been my biggest contributors, I'd say, in dollar amounts. The single biggest contributor, I think, on my report, I'm pretty sure this is true, is Bob Perry. He's a home builder, and he's pretty well known around the country as being the biggest Republican, conservative Republican donor in the country. Not just here, but everywhere. What was the question about Time Warner?
Who was a friend of Time Warner for Comcast?
Those guys didn't give me any money. Most people were giving me is like $250 or $500. I kind of got a little bit of a controversy with them 2 years ago because I sent a letter asking for a telephone campaign, and they sent back a note on it saying, we're not going to give you money because you voted against House, whatever it was, Senate bill, something. And they actually wrote that out. The guy wrote it on a piece of paper. And I went to the speaker and to a prosecutor who's a legislator and said, what is my duty that I've gotten this correspondence from someone saying, I can't give it to you because you voted a certain way on a bill. I thought that there might be a legal implication there because we were voting on that bill again next week. I wanted to be free to vote however I felt the constituents wanted me to vote, but I didn't want to get into a legal quagmire. And I sent a letter to the Time Warner and said, hey man, you know, you can't tell me, you can't link contributions to votes. You can't do that. And they went ape on me and got really mad about it. And, actually had almost half the money my opponent raised in December was from Time Warner, so gave like
$20,000 would be Senator Patrick. And I think you know, as the constituents of District 130, why he feels that it's important that we have someone in District 130 representing the people in the House. And to go back to his reference to the Time Warner issue, he went to two district attorneys out of two separate counties trying to file bribery charges on Time Warner, and they didn't, of course, it wasn't accepted. And Ron McMillan, who's a lobbyist, who is the one that donated the $15,000 to my campaign, was upset about the fact that he had taken that action against them. And they feel like that after seeing the article in the Houston Chronicle, and there was a little bit of follow-up here in our Potpourri and Tribune about the NFL and the cable companies. Rick Casey took Corbin to task on the fact that he said he really wasn't up to speed on the issue, but that when he got back to the legislature, he'd take a look at it. And Corbin received money from PAC Fund that Jerry Jones is involved with, the Cowboys, the NFL. And I made the statement that I thought that the NFL, millionaire NFL, and the millionaire cable companies ought to fight this out in the free market. And Ron McMillan told me he thinks that's where it needs to be handled to the folks.
People actually, and they follow that. Why should they care about this election? Why should they get involved?
Well, first of all, I have three children that are voting age, and I can assure you they've all three witnessed in our family how important that is, and I feel that it's critical that the young men and women that are in our education system today, step out and get involved and vote on all these matters. My role as a board member at Sam Houston State University and a member of the President's Circle, we have a scholarship there for seniors in criminal justice. But I've had a chance to speak with these young people and talk to them about the relevance of what our voting system is. It's not just it's an honor, and I think it's a responsibility, ladies and gentlemen. I think it's the same kind of responsibility that I would have as your legislator to be there and to vote for the people of 130, to understand that it's important that My vote represents everything that you sent me there for. And I think that we have to make sure that all of the young people in our communities understand that if they're not in participating, if they're not voting on these issues, that it's going to affect their lives. And that's where we are now. They have to get out there and vote so they can make a difference.
Well, I think you can tell us by looking at the audience here, by looking at voting records, that we're having this in a college, and you can look at the age demographic down here, and you can see that there aren't any very few young people here. And I think that's normal. I think that is young people excited. A person is what gets young people excited. You're seeing that on the Democrat side with Barack Obama, frankly. There are certain people that energize younger people, and they get wrapped up in a campaign, wrapped up in a human being as a candidate, and then all of a sudden now they're involved. Issues very rarely get them involved, in my experience. It's usually a person or a personality that gets them involved. And so, but I think it's important as an elected official to go into the schools and to energize the students, not just on politically, but just on issues and how they can make a difference. Because believe it or not, at the federal level, sometimes it's hard, it's hard to make a difference, when you just have one vote out of a zillion. But I'm telling you, at the state level, you can take an idea, you can put it into a bill, and 3 months later, you got some people with contaminated water, they're getting clean water. You can affect their lives right there. And that's powerful. And that's why they should care about this race, state government, because state government affects your lives much more directly than a lot of the other races that we have.
Next question is for both of you. Corbin, you're first.
We've got to understand that we can't keep putting the burden on people in the state of Texas. We can't keep taxing everybody out of their house and home. And I'm of the opinion that when you look at all the different situations, like the 20-cent gas tax that we have, 3 cents of it goes to the EPS, 7 or 8 cents of it goes to education, and the rest goes to TxDOT. Those kind of things need to be allocated specifically to what they're there for. That 20 cents was there originally for TxDOT. And we're in a situation right now where all we can do is repair our bridges and do maintenance on our roads. And if we, as a legislature, don't start addressing where the monies are being spent and how we're spending the monies, then what's going to happen is it's going to keep going up. $99 billion in 99, $164 billion in 2007. We've got to do some things that make a difference to the households that we're representing. I mean, folks, the taxes just keep going up and the paycheck just keep getting smaller. And all I know is if I got to Austin, I'd sit there, I'd work with people to try to see if we couldn't figure out a way to use the money and the surplus that we already have for the people of our districts and of our state.
The two biggest chunks of the budget, far and away, are health and human services and public health. So if you want to cut real money, that's where you got to do it. Health and human services is the biggest one. That's the Pac-Man that is gobbling up all state budgets around the country. It's a federal entitlement program, a lot of it. But citizenship, and that cuts over across a lot of these public ed and health and human services issues, are the non-citizens. That's one big thing. That's why illegal immigration is such an important issue in terms of cutting the budget. But secondly, we got to get a Medicaid waiver in our own system. And I'm in a think tank where we do a lot of research on this. I've been doing a lot of reading about it. And one of the things that we're thinking about trying to do next session as conservatives is come up with literally looks like a voucher system where you just instead of going through all this bureaucracy, you just literally, you can cut expenses almost like 50% by just writing a check based on what their income levels are and things like that. You cut out 50% of your health and human services budget. One of the things we did 4 years ago is combine a lot of the health and human services agencies that saved several $1 billion. We need to do more of that. We need to have more frequent verifications on children's health insurance and Medicaid. Not every year, let's do it every 6 months or every 3 months. That cuts a lot of people off the rolls. And on public ed, we need to drive money out of administration into the classroom. That's how you can.
Corbin's next question is directed to you. Do representatives who are not present ever vote?
Well, I'm serious. So what they're doing actually right now, because of all this controversy, these guys know this, they're doing, they do little YouTube things and make it look like, it's pandemonium going on. But the chairman of that committee is actually studying so we can have a 21st century voting, so we can have maybe 6 or 7 different stations around the room, maybe have like fingerprint voting, so they don't have to deal with these old machines anymore.
Well, I haven't had the opportunity, but I would think that based on the business I'm in, with what's happened over the last several years, CCTV and cameras and technology and card access and all the technology we have, there ought to be a 21st century way for these men and women to vote. And I know that it's supposed to be a violation for them to vote for one another. And yet it's become a process by which they do. And I don't really understand why they do that. I think that if we get the technology in place where we can cast our own votes, then we'll be a lot better off. If I had missed as many votes as Carpenter missed, I think I'd get my friends to vote for me more often.
Next question is directed to Alan. Alan states that he witnessed Corbin being absent 144 times for committee. This seems to be a misstatement unless he was physically present. Perhaps you should clarify this statement.
I said I was providing information that was an absentee record. I personally wasn't there. I actually have a job and I'm working back here. But I'm asking to be the one up there. And if I'm there, you can witness me there, both.
As building total.
The Tomball bypass was, the only reason it was even built for is because they had the authority to do it. The new lanes is tolling. Back when we had meetings back in 2000, y'all may remember that they tried to put toll booths down at Willowbrook and stick them on the existing 249. And, you know, we had big hearings and we defeated that. And actually, I helped pass a law the next session. I stuck an amendment in one of Mike Creasy's bills that requires voter approval, anything like that, because there are some rural areas where they do want to be able to do that, to go around their town. But in terms of all the new capacity on 249 is going to be tolled one way or the other, because that's one reason they're building. If you don't want tolls, which a lot of people don't, you just can wait another 20 years to get the road. But you can still drive on all the lanes that are there now for free, but any new existing capacity is just going to be tolled.
Well, this is a subject near and dear to my heart, is it not, Bruce? I was the chair of Mobility and Transportation when this was going on. I had the honor of becoming the co-chair with Mr. Peter McStravick, who we lost this year. So you need to be aware of the fact that because of the funding issues that I've alluded to earlier about how the money's, you know, I have a heart for law enforcement, and I'm not saying that DPS doesn't need money, but we don't need to be spending the money that was allocated by our, you know, 20-cent tax for DPS and for education when we can only repair bridges and maintenance right now, folks. We need to have money to do this. So everything that's built from this point forward is going to be a toll road. So we as a legislature have to address the fact that when we say that monies are going to be spent for something like the lottery for our schools, that's how the money needs to be spent.
Alan's campaign states that Corbin works for the Austin establishment. Corbin's campaign states he voted the same way Senator Patrick voted 97% of the time. Question. Since Dan Patrick supports the Fletcher campaign, how does Alan Fletcher feel about Dan Patrick appearing to vote for the Austin establishment?
you know, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about a while ago about the lawyers making the facts fit the case. I saw some literature that Corbin put out in Power Texas about how he was 82% vote conservative and Dan was 62, and now he and Dan vote 97% of the time the same way. I'm trying to figure out how, was that 97% of Dan 62? Or, I mean, I truly don't understand how that math works. And I truly believe that Senator Patrick, the fact that I can be the voice of District 130 in the House is sincere.
Well, I think that question sounds like a loaded question. I think someone's trying to have some fun with that. But, you know, basically, Dan's a conservative. There's no doubt about that. I will tell you I am, too, though. And I think that the problem is you take so many votes. I think some people are leaning over me. I'm talking about it. You take so many votes that you can always find votes that were mistakes or that you didn't realize what you were voting on. A lot of times, like, an amendment flies out there, and you vote on it, right? You read it. You vote on it right on the spot. You don't have a day to read it, day to look at it. It happens all the time. You do dozens and dozens of votes like that. There's lots of votes I can tell you about the DMA that were not good votes. I'm not going to do that. I mean, Dan's conservative. You know, I'm a conservative. We did vote like 97% of the time. That's really all there is to say about it. Now, I will tell you that this Empower Texans, I think is what you said, they're just a special interest group. There's lots of special interest groups in Austin. There's hundreds of them. And some of them are conservative, some are liberal, some of them are native, some of them are trade groups like engineers or contractors or, you know, whatever.
Why did you vote for deregulation of college tuition? Now it's not affordable for the middle class. What are you going to do to get costs under control?
I think the main reason that people voted back in 2003, back when I was a freshman, is because of the healthcare and public ed parts of the budget, every other part of the budget, there was pressure to go from taxpayer subsidized spending to user, what I call user pay spending. So whether it was a road, whether it was a college, anything that was not on public ed and human health and human services, there was a tremendous pressure to cut spending. And the way you cut spending on roads is you quit using, you know, taxpayer funds to do the roads, you use tolls or something that's a user fee. Same thing with higher ed. Higher ed, there was less money in taxpayer subsidized funds to spread over higher ed, so it was like, let's have people actually using the institutions pick up a higher percentage of the thing. Now, nobody obviously thought that the schools were gonna jack it up like they jacked it up. And I'll tell you, there's a tremendous pressure right now to be regulated. And I'll tell you what, one thing I hate to see is elected officials who don't admit they could have made a mistake or did make a mistake. My pride's not that big. I mean, it has been in the past, but God shot my pride down pretty hard the last few years serving the legislature. And I'm not afraid to admit that. I think tuition deregulation was a mistake. And I think that it ought to be regulated. I don't know where to regulate it. I don't know where to set the bar. I have to talk to a whole lot of people and a whole lot of different groups in terms of the colleges, the appropriators, the LBB, the student groups, to find out.
Alumni of the board for San Houston State, program criminal justice, and be a member of the President's Circle at SAM. My wife and I, since I started my company 9 years ago, have got a scholarship for seniors in criminal justice, and to a semester, that's summer, spring, and fall. And let me say that when we first started that 9 years ago, that this deregulation hadn't taken place. And Texas University's gone up 106%, I think A&M 67%. Across the board, the top 35 schools is 43%. As a university, when I met with three of the regions that are from San Houston that are on the Texas regions, I talked to President Jim Gatner about this. 76% of the young men and women at San Houston State University are on financial aid. Now, I think that's a misrepresentation. I don't think it's financial aid when 13% are on grants and scholarships and the rest are on loans that mom and dad signed for. I call that debt. And we've got to do something about the fact that our middle class can't afford to send their kids to school. And San Houston State over the last 3 years has been the fastest growing university in the state of Texas. And if I get a chance to go to Austin, I'll take a look at that. And I would say that it would be my position that the monies that are spent on the lottery ought to go to the schools. The money that are spent on gas tax ought to go to TxDOT. The monies that they tell us they're going to spend them, the taxes they take from us, they're going to spend on these things, they should be spent on the things they said they were going to be spent on, ladies and gentlemen.
Every single town hall I've ever held, someone's asked that question about the lottery and wasn't that supposed to solve the problem of education and why isn't it all being used for education? Alan's exactly right that anytime the government at any level takes money for a certain purpose, that's where they ought to use it. There shouldn't be diversions. And ever since I've been there, what we've done is we've started undoing the diversions. And there have been a lot of undone, actually. There's a lot more to be undone. But I'll be honest with you. My position on the lottery is I want to get rid of the whole thing. And I'll tell you why. I did kill it. My first session, I called a point of order on Ron Wilson. And Ron, which I said, Ron Wilson was like the rules supreme commander of the universe. He was in charge of the lottery bill. He was trying to expand the lottery to multi-state. I went up there and called a point of order on his bill. I thought he was just going to shoot. But I will tell you that the lottery, if you look at the demographics of who plays the lottery, okay, it is the people who can at least afford to play the lottery. People who play the lottery are people who are on government services. They're on the Health and Human Services mistake.
This next question is addressed to both of you and Corbin, you're first. What will you do in Austin to make District 130 a priority on oil and gas, defining gas prices, on toll roads, Trans-Texas Corridor, on 287G, Texas border, and to return more of the gas tax from the federal government to Texas?
That's a lot of issues. I think on a railroad commission, the only state stuff. I think I've been doing stuff with the Railroad Commission. I've actually had some constituents want to meet with Commissioner Williams, and so I'm actually in the process of setting that up. I've helped Commissioner Williams pass a couple of bills, and he's glad to come down and meet. I think that's the way you get attention to that, is get the guy actually down here to meet with people. 287G is a crucial a thing we have to do with the state. That involves getting your state officials cross-trained so they can deport, local and state officials can deport folks who are illegal aliens out back across Mexico. They don't have to be federal officials. You can do it with local and state. That's very important. The Heritage Foundation picture. Because Texas has been very arrogant. Their leadership has been very arrogant. They've been running over people. And, you know, one of my cousins is a famous guitar player, Jimmy Bond, and he's been a leader on fighting the Trans-Texas Corridor as well. But every House member voted for the bill that had that. And those of us that figured out what was going on, figured out real quick. And when you figure out you made a mistake, you don't sit around and try to talk around it. You do something about it. And that's what we've been trying to do.
The Trans-Texas Corridor obviously is a violation of our sovereignty. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that we can have a foreign entity come into this country and go in and violate the eminent domain of the people of the great state of Texas and then us pay for it for the next 30 years. I don't think 30 years we'll see it. It'll probably take long and that'll be forever, but we like all these programs. I know that we've kind of beaten this up already with respect to the fact that we've in a situation where we don't have the funds to do anything other than toll our future roads. I really wish that the 20 cents we're talking about would really fix the bridges and do the maintenance, but I just don't think it's enough to get it done. So we're going to have to do something about trying to come up with some funding for that. I know that addressing the issue about the oil and gas in this area, I mean, we've spent so much time over the last few years fighting with people about the fact that we have all these little pipes and stuff underground here. I've been to Austin several times about that when we were dealing with the bypass. If I get a chance to get up to Austin and I can get involved in, dealing with the people that are trying to allocate these funds. Today, Charles Backers, our county judge, talked about the fact that as a debtor state, the government, we're like 50th on the monies that come back. How can the state of Texas? He said the last time that we really got our fair share back was when Phil Graham was senator. But how can we be 50th on the monies that come back from the federal government? So we just got to go up there and address those issues and see what we can do.
Next question is addressed to both of you, and Alan, it's yours to begin. How would the state of Texas and counties generate taxes if, one, the business tax was calculated for net resources, and two, the property tax is rescinded?
Well, I think the bottom line is this business margins tax is based on gross. And when you look at, all these small businesses out here, there's a lot of companies out there that do everything they can all year long to actually meet their payroll, buy new equipment, and stay open. And, I think a lot of folks think that if someone owns a business, they got a lot of money and they're making a big living because they're feeding, they're paying the salaries of a lot of families.
But and also some sales tax, primarily some property tax. As no coincidence, Texas has one of the highest property taxes in the United States. And also as no coincidence, if you look at per capita spending and taxes, Texas state taxes are about 49th, ranked about 49th. Florida ranks lower than we do. Everybody else is higher. And so the reason for that is because in the Constitution of Texas, Texas is forbidden from personal sales tax, and they're forbidden from taxing property. The state cannot tax property, and the state cannot tax personal income. So the state is very restricted on what kinds of monies it can raise. Well, that's a good thing, because it's good to have systemic limitations on how you can get people's money out of their pocket, because then no matter what, whether it's Democrats, Republicans, or whatever, it's harder and harder to get the money. But I can tell you that our problem here in Texas is the property tax. And so what we're doing is looking for ways to use surplus, dedicate surplus right now constitutionally, so that over time it buys down the school property tax to zero. Because the state does share in funding the schools, but like we don't, most of your taxes are on property, or if it's not school, it's basically county, city, MUD, special purpose districts. But on the school stuff, we do impact that because we share the responsibility with the local districts. And what we want to do is start dedicating surplus to buy down the rate to zero on the school property tax, and therefore when the legislature switches hands or whatever happens in the future, they're bound in the future by the constitutional limitations.
Question incorporated here first. If Corbin has missed so many votes,
how do they get done with their business? They go out and eat or you know, go visit. And I, this last session, I went out twice. You know, I was like, just hold up. Like, state affairs typically meets till 3, 4, 5 in the morning, twice a week. Appropriations meets every single day. Calendar sometimes meets twice in the same day. It's happened twice where in calendars, they tend to put people in calendars who live within 300 miles of Austin. And the reason is they have to call calendars meeting sometimes on an emergency basis. Twice this happened where I was driving back from Austin one night, and I got to 2920, and the call came and said, we got to have another calendars meeting. So you got to literally turn around and drive back to Austin. That's happened twice since I've been on calendars. So, I think that people that appoint people to committees are smart enough to figure out whether someone's lazy or not. And, you know, I am one of the younger members of the legislature. I think it does bring a perspective. I do have kids in public school. A lot of the folks in the legislature are older, they're retired. A lot of them are millionaires. I'm not. And I think I bring a perspective that's more like a regular person that lives in District 130 as opposed to just some guy who made a lot of money and kind of wants to do it as a hobby.
Maybe he has an explanation for that? It won't be online for the state because outside where he was absent, where he had a chance to write where he was and why he was absent, which I would appreciate. And if I have to miss a vote, and I don't plan on missing any, but if I have to miss a vote, I promise you, I'll write something out there to explain to you where I was.
Next question, Alan, your verse is addressed to both of you. How will each of you address how to solve the roadway funding shortage here in Texas?
Roadway funding. Well, I just feel like I'm going over there. The bottom line is, the 20-cent gas tax hasn't gone up in a number of years, and the fact that we're not actually using the whole 20 cents for TxDOT and the road shortage, I mean, we at the very least, we've got to figure out a way to use some of the surplus we have. We have to figure out a way to make sure that the monies that are being allocated out of that 20 cents to education and to the DPS are not, that they're sent back to TxDOT. As far as how we're going to go about as a state to raise the additional funds, I mean, they're just the roadways are, we're way behind right now. You know, I told some people the other day, if I have the honor of your vote and I get to be your state rep, I just want you to remember a year from now when 249 and 290 are still backed up, it's not my fault that this has already happened. And then we were about, in 2008, we're set at about 2011 before we can get anything done around here.
Well, most of your funding for roads like 290 is a federal highway, and so most of your SB 792 is the name of the bill. Now the local urban areas have primacy over TxDOT, and that was a huge step in getting us, because I'll be honest with you, 80% of the needs of vehicle lane miles are in the urban areas of Texas, not in the rural areas. And for years and years and years and years, the legislature was primarily controlled by rural legislators. And so that's why you had a lot of money going to farm and market roads, rural roads. It was being siphoned off. I mean, you had the federal siphon where it was going to other states, but you also had a state siphon where it was going into areas that don't have the urban population growth. Well, now that's changed. And so now you have more of the chairs and the committee of the people that empower the structure that are from the urban areas and the suburban areas. That is where the need is. And so we use Senate Bill 792 from here on out. And right now, TxDOT's going through the sunset process. Every 12 years, the agency goes through sunset. TxDOT's going through sunset. They're going through heavy scrutiny. And the chairman of the Highway Commission, as y'all may know, recently passed away of an unexpected heart attack. So there's going to be a new person in place that's primarily going to be probably from an urban area. And so that's how we leverage this to use more. It's going to take more user pay on the state roads to get them paid for and funded. The federal road, I believe that as a state, we should be putting more people. When I go down there to the border, actually I have committee meetings down there next week on the border. If you talk to the folks down there, they're doing the work. They need more people. They need more resources. They need more equipment, surveillance equipment. And they need, and I believe, in physical obstacles. I believe in fences and barbed, just things that, you know, when I was a kid, I lived in Europe for 2 years, and I saw a fence that worked. It was in Germany. And I can tell you, it worked. And so I think that we have to use all those things from the state. And I'll tell you, one of the things I did this session, and there were some other concerns, and Debbie Riddle was one of them. We were on appropriations, our first session on appropriations. And when the budget started coming through the committee, we went to the speaker and we said, Mr. Speaker, there are two things we have to have, or we're not voting for the budget. One of them is, it's got to have the border security money put in there, because it was not in there. We said, we're not voting for this unless the border security stuff's in there. Secondly, it's got to keep state discretionary spending flat. That was our two prerequisites. When the speaker told Chairman Chisholm, who's from the panhandle, you got to get the border security stuff in there. He started pulling stuff out of the budget so he could put the border security in, and that's why that was in there leaving the House. Because some new conservatives on appropriations insisted on it. And Representative Riddle's not here because she's sick. She called me this morning. I can barely understand her because she sounded like a frog when she called me. But I will tell you, that is why that got put in the budget.
Well, I think the number one issue for the people of the state of Texas right now is our political candidate. $110 million out of $164 billion. Now, folks, $110 million is a lot of money to work with, folks, but $110 million out of $164 billion is not much. And I know that the DPS got over $100 million of that, and the sheriff was saying that he needs boots on the ground. He needs, you know, people there to help him. They're making a difference. I had the opportunity to speak with Congressman Culberson a few months ago over at Cherry Tree, and he said that we have enough technology, enough personnel, enough laws to secure our borders at this time, enough money to secure our borders, not put any more money into it. Now, we've got 19 points of entry, and the fence might help and work there, and there may be some specific places along the border in Texas where we can do our fences. But I have the honor of, we talked about endorsements, the U.S. Border Watch and the Minutemen. I had a chance to meet with Larry Youngblood last night, where God love her, Debbie got sick probably because she was in the rain over there at the Harris County Executive Board, where all the precinct chairs were. We met there, and it was pouring down rain. She got wet. But Larry showed me a letter last night that 2006, and he told me last night, the reason he's supporting me is he sent this request to Corbin about what are you going to do about helping us increase medical expertise, and how a lot of us are alive. We're all living a lot longer, as the commercial TV says, 50 to do 40. If we are going to have our parents in our homes, then we definitely need to do something about trying to help people. But I think that today, what the Democrats are trying to do about universal insurance and trying to make sure that everybody's insured, we've got to just make sure that we don't decide that we're going to tax the people of Texas, all the people of Texas, to try to help offset that expense that folks will have for having their families, their parents in home.
Well, I think tax rates are generally always good. I will tell you, though, that I think sometimes when you start playing games with policy on who gets tax breaks and who doesn't, that to me is what the whole Internal Revenue Service has turned into, is people picking and choosing who gets what breaks, and things become so complex because they play politics with who gets the breaks. And so I'm all for paying less taxes and giving people breaks on things, but sometimes it turns into a maze of who has the most political pop in the system to get a tax break. So I'd be honest with you, I'd have to look at all the different sides of the issue. One thing you learn as a freshman real quick is you stay in position on something, then you got eight guys come up in committee and share something that you weren't considering or didn't think about, and show you a different side of the issue. And then you realize, hey, it actually is doing the opposite of what you wanted to do. So like the lottery is one example. Everybody thought the lottery was going to raise money.
Let me read it to you. Do you feel that the negative campaign in this election is affecting the Republican Party's ability to be Democratic?
I think that negative campaigning is bad. And I think that, I took people to Missouri to campaign against Gore in the general election, battleground state. I took people to South Dakota to campaign against for John Thune against Tim Robinson up in South Dakota, and that was a battleground state. I took people to Wisconsin to campaign against Kerry, and it's about. If you've ever worked on a presidential race in a battleground state, come with me next time. It is a war zone. But I will tell you that some of the stuff that I've been subjected to in this race has been worse than that. What I say is unfortunate. Is that Ronald Reagan said Republicans aren't supposed to be attacking Republicans. And so, yes, I do think that
these are facts. And I don't think we're talking about hurting the Republican Party. I think what we're talking about is hurting the conservative movement. And what you've got is conservatives attacking people that aren't conservative.
Next question is addressed to both of you, and Alan, this is your question. First, My vote is very important, and I will give it freely. If the both of you could start your campaigns over tomorrow, what would you do differently? How would you earn my vote?
What would I do differently? Well, you know, I think what we've done has been very effective. I've worked really hard to meet people in the district. I've walked every day on weekends and knocked on doors. I think my relationship with the precinct chairs and meeting the men and women that, you know, truly have their finger on the pulse of what's going on in our district has been the right way to run this campaign, to get to know the men and women that know the people that live in their neighborhoods, that know how they feel and know what's important to them. And I guess the only thing I could say that I would do differently is I would try to go out and make sure that I had lined up enough money to try to offset the fact that, you know, my monies have been raised in this district from friends and family at $1,500 a time. That's the bulk of my money. My opponent has received 85% of his money from outside the district. Something about the fact that we represent the people of our district, I think we'll all be better for it.
I think you always learn something by going through campaigns, especially when you just go through things tough, you know, period, whether they're campaign related or not. This has been a very tough time, and I think that, you know, I think it's hard to say what I've learned now. I think that'll come with time, and I think that if anything, the things I've learned from this will be more personal in nature. I think it's sort of been a testing of my faith in a lot of ways, and just what do I really believe in, what in a personal sense, I don't mean in a political or issue sense. So I think that'll come with time, you know, with perspective. But, you know, it's hard to say because I spent a lot of time praying during this campaign, but I think I would have prayed more than I have. And I think I would try to be more compassionate towards people and maybe more forgiving. I think sometimes I get angry, and that's wrong. I shouldn't do that. I think I should just never been. And so that's something we really ought to be blessed for.
Next question, I see we're running out of time. Question number 31 is for Corbin First, addressed to both of you. Why are the children of illegal aliens allowed to pay in-state tuition for college, but American citizens are charged higher out-of-state rates?
I don't think they should be allowed. Matter of fact, I'll tell you what, a lot of conservatives will think they should be admitted. I think that we need to, you know, last session there were a couple of bills filed on that didn't get very far. And, you know, we need to do something about that and fix it. I think that's inexcusable. I think part of it has to do with their leadership. You know, there have been some guys at the top saying they're not interested in that. You can get on Google and figure out who they are. It's not hard to figure out. But that's why those of us, the reps and the senators, need to just force it on.
Well, I think it's ridiculous that illegals can be, you know, given a break in our state when, you know, folks in our country who are here legally can't. And I think that we just need to stop it completely. I just don't think that, you know, I'm no cop. When you put the word illegal in front of something, that makes it wrong from the get-go. So let's just stop it.
So our last question, addressed to both of you, and Alan
Landgun. I know that it was designed to, you know, help protect our citizenry, and after, you know, reviewing it and studying it and seeing that there was some training going on and knowing that there was going to be some background checks and things done about the people that get their hands on a gun, we were really concerned as peace officers, and there's some in the room tonight, and I know they would concur with me, that we were worried about, you know, folks having the guns taken away from them and being used on them. But I do think that it has caused the criminals to think twice, because you don't know that old boy or that lady with the big purse in the mall parking lot that's got a gun in there. But as far as going back to the old West and having them strapped on their leg and carrying out, no, absolutely not.
I'm 100% behind the concealed carry law. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I'm opposed to the open carry. I am endorsed by National Rifle Association in this race, and I have an A voting record from those guys. It entire time I'm in the legislature, but not open carrying arms, though.
Audience, those are where we can give the time that's necessary to represent the people of District 130. That we are in a position in our lives with our children, you know, grown. We've got, you know, two married daughters and a grandbaby. We've got a 19-year-old son that's a military policeman. He's currently in Fort Benning, and he's got his orders to deploy to Iraq. You know, my son said to me, ladies and gentlemen, he said, "Dad, if I can cross the ocean to represent our country and, you know, protect our country, you can cross Spring Creek to represent District 130. And I can tell you that I truly, after evaluating this race and going door to door out here in the Tomball area, Lakewood, up by HP, and knowing that the people in that area probably had heard my name, they knew that I was the chairman of the chamber, that I'd been out of this community for the last 18 years, that when I got over into the far reaches of the district, and it's a big district, go to my website, alabutcher.org, take a look at Get Involved. On that, that's the icon, it'll take you to the map. You get a feel for just how big your district is. Maybe you have, maybe you don't realize just how big District 130 is. When I went door to door, I've knocked on these doors, I've talked to these folks. They care, they're interested in what's going on in their state, and they want someone that they can depend on, someone that will come to them first and find out what's important to them. Someone that will vote the district, that cares about the issues that are relevant to the people of the district, above and beyond what's going up in Austin, and you know, that established the club voting. Thank you.
I lived in this district for, since 1995, and my family, my kids have gone to school here, and in Cypher and in Tomball. And, you know, there are a lot of issues that Alan is passionate about running on. The entire time I've been in the legislature, I've never represented Alan because he's never lived in District 130. And all the issues that he's campaigning on now, he's never mentioned to me while I've been in the legislature, even though he's been very active in the Tomball Chamber. And I talked to his state representative, Rob Eisler, who voted the same way on these issues that he thinks were wrong. And he's never talked to him either. That's what Representative Eisler tells me. So, you know, he attended a town hall meeting of mine back in September, just a few months ago. He showed up and said I was doing a great job, and he was here to support me at my town hall meeting. So, you know, I think there's a story behind this whole campaign that one day will be told. It's an interesting story. But I will tell you that it talks about openly, but it's sort of underlying every issue we talk about here is our national sovereignty. There's a lot of issues here, whether we're talking about schools, immigration, Trans-Texas Corridor, foreign ownership of infrastructure, whatever you want to call it, right underneath the surface there, you're talking about our sovereignty as a nation. And this is the issue. This is the defining issue that we're in right now. And so we can talk about taxes and spending and all these things. They're very important. But every one of those in this state is tied to the issue of national sovereignty. And so this is an important time that we're in. Texas is a conservative state. And it's important that we have conservatives in the legislature. I don't think there's any doubt that Alan's conservative. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. What I do take issue with, though, is when people try to say that I'm not. I think if you just go look at the votes and things that have happened and things that have been done, there are disagreements about certain things fiscally. But if you look at what's been going on, I have one of the most conservative voter records in the state of Texas. And those of you that have helped with your problems in your subdivisions, or you personally, you know, unlike some of the legislators, my staff, we do serve the people on their problems and right at the ground level. And many of y'all are on my email list. I talk to y'all every week, and I want your vote too. Thank you.
This concludes our forum for this evening. We regret that all the questions submitted were
answered. Election day is Tuesday, March 4th, and all registered voters may cast ballots on that day from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. at your assigned precinct location. No voting day locations have been posted as of yet. Is that right, gentlemen? Take advantage of the early voting, which is offered from Tuesday, February 19th through Friday, the 22nd, at the Town Hall Public Works Building, which is at 501 James Street, from 8 a.m. to 4:30. And February 23rd, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.